Hey, everybody, Rob here, getting you set up for a brand new show that we're doing for the patrons of Rob as a Podcast. It's called Survivor Academy. I imagine that there are a lot of people that listen to Rob as a Podcast because they are trying to think about what they are going to do eventually when they get onto Survivor. Now, while I may not be able to help you get to the island, we can work on the types of things you'll need to think about when you are there. That is what we are going to do each week on Survivor Academy. Think of me as your personal Survivor instructor, where we are going to answer some questions about every single episode and thinking about the way the game is evolving and how future Survivor players should be adapting to what's happening on the island. Today, we'll be joined by guest lecturer Phil Thompson. He once upon a time podcast about all of Kid Nation, has a great sense of the game, how young people are thinking about the game. Looking forward to hearing what he has to say about everything here at Survivor Academy. If you like what I'm saying about Survivor Academy, head on over to robisawebsite.com/patron, where you can get exclusive access to our patron podcast feed, access to our patron community on Facebook and Discord. Plus, we make it very easy for you to watch things like Australian Survivor, Big Brother Canada, and more, plus lots of other great benefits, and you get to support everything we're doing here at Rob Has a Podcast. So this is the one and only free preview that we are doing here of Survivor Academy. I hope you enjoy it. If you're interested in hearing us again next week, head on over to robiswebsite.com/patron. Enjoy the preview of Survivor Academy. Welcome, students, to the Survivor Academy, and class is in session. Welcome back. This is a brand new show that we're doing for the patrons of Rob as a Podcast here during season 42 of Survivor. My idea here was, how do we give something to the people who are so interested in Survivor that they're listening to maybe a 9th or 10th Survivor podcast for the week? These are the people that probably love Survivor so much because they are going to one day be on Survivor. And so I thought this would be a great opportunity to become the coach, not coach from Survivor, but let me be your Survivor teacher here every week, where we take a look at what's working, what's not working, where the game is headed. And that is why we bring you now to Survivor University. And I'm very happy to be back here with a man who has studied reality TV, a man who can help me maybe bridge the gap with talking to some of our Gen Z listeners. Of course, my co-host from when we talked about Kid Nation. It is a great joy to bring in our guest speaker today, Phil Thompson. Phil, how are you?
What's going on, Rob? You know, I haven't played Survivor yet, but yeah, I'll be that like assistant coach that'll kind of be in the corner. And I haven't played the game, but I'm a student of the game.
I believe
after 40 seasons, you know, yeah, I'll be able to give you a little bit of something.
And yeah, Phil, I thought that you were such a great person to talk to on the first edition of the Survivor Academy, because that I felt like age-wise that I feel like you are right there in that demo that Survivor is looking to cast. So that I thought that you could help me even better communicate to a lot of the young people that are listening and attending Survivor Academy.
Yeah, you know, I know how to talk to the youths, all the little kids.
Right.
Oh, that's, yeah.
You do.
I'm like, you know, I'll be like Zach. I'll be like, oh, I don't want to be just like Zach, but you know what I mean? All the younger people. I think hopefully we can, you know, help bridge that kind of gap and be able to talk to people of all ages and everyone who wants to play Survivor.
Yeah, I really just thought that in terms of the people that listen to Rob as a Podcast, I think there's a big cross-section of those people who listen to Rob as a Podcast because that they see themselves one day as being people that are going to be on Survivor. You know, and I think that we have a lot of people from this cast, you know, Zach included, people who were listening to Rob as a Podcast and then use that as part of their preparation to go play in Survivor. So why not create one show a week where I'm focused a little bit less on how am I making jokes, being funny, and a little bit more of like going back to sort of like the TEOS of it all on a weekly basis of, you know, where is the game headed and what should players be doing in specific situations?
Rob, look at you. You're giving back to the community. You know, you're doing your community service. You're teaching out here. Wow, you're giving back. This is the master class we're getting.
We're
right
trying.
Here.
We're trying. Anyway, Phil, my original idea that I sort of ended up tweaking over the course of the weeks was that I thought that this was going to be more like a Survivor boot camp, and I was going to be like a drill sergeant, just like yelling at the future, like, you maggots think you can go out there? You think you know anything?
You repeating the same like 20 sentences over and over, drilling it into people. It's less about the variety and more of the repetition that'll really get them to be like, all right, I can't find the idol. Like, you mm-hmm. know?
Yeah. No, but I just think that the idea of, you know, doing sort of like, you know, extra work with the people that are interested in this subject matter, because I feel like that the people that are listening to an episode or two of the podcast, I feel like that this isn't for them, but this is something that I feel like that really caters to the people who, you know, see themselves one day suiting up to going out there. Phil, would you ever do that?
One day ever play Survivor?
Yeah. Would you be interested in that?
I'd be interested. I'd have to go through the whole, you know, casting thing and everything like that, which sounds like a mm-hmm. little bit much.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, going on Survivor, it's also the thing where I've seen so much of the show that I try to relate everything back to how I'm playing.
Yeah.
Which I know you can't do that. I know you got to just chill and go with the flow. So
yeah.
I think I'd overthink it. And I also think I'd probably just end up, unfortunately, being a Zach
yeah.
and trying, but yeah. then going out a little early.
Yes. Well, Phil, I know you have a great strategic mind and yes. you love talking strategy. So I'm very happy to have you here with us. You know, you're exactly the type of person that I'm looking for to come and be a guest speaker. I think that we'll also, I bet we'll have some Survivor alumni also along the way to go through and help me talk about all of this. I'm going to give out a link to a question form that you can send out or you can fill out every week. Go to robswebsite.com/academyquestions to be able to send in your questions. Even if you're not a patron and you hear this link, you can still send in questions. You're just not going to hear the show unless you're a patron. So feel free to send your questions in. But if you want the answers to those questions, that's where we're going to do it every week. We got a lot of great questions from the Robins Podcast patrons in the Facebook group and a lot of different things to dig in, specifically cater to. And you know, the nice thing about this is that like at every point in the game, we'll be able to, you know, stop down and talk about what's going on. So a lot of questions related to the opening of the game, the start of the game. We saw Zach, who came out and had all of the knowledge that you would probably need to have to go out and play Survivor. It did not work out for Zach. You know, maybe he's on a different tribe and they don't go to the first immunity challenge and he's able to get his footing under him and it ends up being a different story. But here we have Zach who, you know, we're not here to dunk on Zach or anything like that in terms of him like going out there and it not working. But I do think that there are things to take away from Zach's 3 days that we'll definitely talk about here today, Phil.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think, you know, was Zach someone I would say that he did try and he seems like he prepared to go on the show beforehand, which is great. But I think just the way his perception and the way he gave like the energy he gave off. And I guess like with his challenge performance and everything, it didn't work out this time. But cool. I think there is a lot to learn from it.
What'd you think of the premiere?
I thought it was great. I love that this is like, I think one of the first premieres that where just no one found an idol in the first episode. Like, mm-hmm. I don't remember the last time that's happened in a little bit. And I love the intro packages they're doing. I love, like, the show is definitely changing and, you know, people can complain about how the show's changing. But I do think that there's some changes that are great. And I think that now, like, I know way more about a lot of these people than maybe I wouldn't have before if they played on the season before, yeah. you know, they revamped it.
I don't remember if anybody found an idol in last season's premiere. That I think that, and maybe it's possible that Xander found an idol in the first 3 days, and then we didn't end up seeing it until the second episode when he ends up going to the challenge. But yeah, we saw Jeff hide the idol, and I think Tiffany looked for it, but we didn't see the idol found until Xander in the second episode. So I think that's a great place to start off talking about the idols. We saw in this episode, Tori went out and looked for the hidden immunity idol. There was a secret scene this week. I don't know. Did you happen to catch that?
Oh, no, I didn't, unfortunately.
It was a secret scene. Well, I can tell you what happened. But Jackson went out to go and look for the hidden immunity idol. And Jackson was like, hey, I'm going to go find the idol. And he ends up really getting like a lot of like shade thrown onto him, really, by Jonathan. Jonathan talks to Omar and Marianne, and like, hey, the three of us, we got to stick together and keep an eye on Jackson. So it seems to me like the person looking for the hidden immunity idol early on, I think that we can come out and tell me if you think that this is, you know, too soon to jump to this conclusion.
Yeah.
Stop doing it.
Really? Because I mean, I understand what you say by that, but also when you look back at so many of the season's winners in the past, a lot of the people that have won, like I think in the last 10, 15 seasons, it's like a lot of the winners found the idol so early on and they kept it. You know what I mean?
Yes.
That gives them that little strength, that little boost. And I don't know. Yeah.
Well, one of the things that I really want to make sure that we're doing here, we're in the Survivor Academy. And of course, you know, David Bloomberg has his rules for playing Survivor. But I want to make sure that we are like really fluid here. And just because something is working in season 30 or season 32, I want to make sure it's still working in season 42.
Right.
Because I think that with the advent of these immunity idols that you find, you know, we've seen that, oh, this is good for this many tribal councils. Obviously, the players don't know about the beware advantages. I think that at least in the pre-merge, I think that Survivor is doing a lot to water down the power of the hidden immunity idol here early on. And I really think that just sort of like from a cost benefit analysis, I think that there is maybe almost as much cost potentially in terms of like people wanting to get rid of you as there is to benefit from the hidden immunity idol in the pre-merge.
Definitely. It's a big risk. And you know, it even like we saw Tori talking about it. Just what she's like, oh yeah, I'm going off to go look for something. But then she was actually like, yo, I'm actually going to find this idol. I'm going to take this little risk. And I do think that because everyone's seen the show and everyone has seen, you know, like people say, oh, I'm going to go sneak off and, or I'm going to go help find, you know, some palms, you know, find something. And then they're actually going to go, you know, find the idol. We all know that that's what people are doing. So now because of that, I think people have their, you know, they have that laser focus on, hey, you just left the camp. You're literally about to go look for an idol way more than I think people even did like, 10 seasons ago. So I definitely think that that's true, that right now it's like, that is like, like the red flags go off if anyone leaves the camp now.
Which, especially like, and it seems like that where like the sweet spot is for finding the idol is like, you know, episodes like 2, 3, 4. It just feels like that. Like I think on the first 3 days, I think we got to say that forget about it with the idol hunting. Like, you know, you want to like go and, you know, where we saw like Kelly Wentworth in 31 where, okay, I am doing like I am doing things and I'm looking like, you know, left, right a little bit when I'm out there. But I think that the idea of, you know, the like, you know, spending some time with the idol hunting, I think it's not helping.
Well, here's the thing. I do think it really depends on your social standing in the game. I do think that if you're still like the kind of like running, you think you feel very comfortable with the people on your tribe and you feel like you have trust with people, then I think you would be able to sneak off with the idol way more than if you're someone that is kind of on the bottom, which is kind of counterintuitive, unfortunately, that, you know, the one on the bottom has to stay back. But I do think that if you're on the bottom, people are looking at you way more, you know? So then it's like, okay, you just left, you're gone. mm-hmm. and it's way hard. Like, you know, the lasers are on you. But I do think that, you know, if you're running the game a little bit more, you might have a little bit of, you know, leeway with it.
But I feel like that if you have that social standing, I mean, is the hidden immunity idol super important to you?
Right. Well, I do think that one of the reasons why it's so important to find the idol early on is because, you know, there's no, like, this is your chance to find it. You know, who knows if mm-hmm. on day 9, someone already has that idol. That's the thing, is that you want to be the first one to get it. You want to, like, you want to hold on to that for as long as you can. Mm-hmm. And I think there's just a general fear that you would have, or anxiety. If I played, being an anxiety that I would have about, oh, snap, it's mm-hmm. day 5 and I don't have it, there's a big chance someone else does have it.
Yeah.
But I do think that there may be watering that down a little bit, where the idol matters a little bit less and other advantages do, which could help.
Yeah, I really want to keep season 41 like top of mind in terms of like how players reacted to that. And I know not every single season is going to be the same, but I think that probably like season 41, I think is the most important season to be looking at. We're talking about any of the past seasons. And just in terms of the players that had the idol, Xander had the idol for the entire game. And that seems very important. Like, Xander found the idol very early. And ultimately, he got to the final three. But is there causation there where Danny talked about in his exit interviews? He's like, yeah, like we just didn't care about Xander. Like he was not considered to be a big threat in terms of, so I don't know necessarily if Xander may, I mean, it might have helped like on the split vote with Tiffany, but I don't know if Xander was heavily targeted throughout the game. And I don't know if it was because he had the idol.
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely true. I think, you know, the idol might matter a little bit less in the mm-hmm. game in general, just because there's so many more of them. And so it mm-hmm. used to be way more of a rare thing, but now it's like, all right, you have an idol. Yeah. I just pooped in the ocean. It's fine. Right. We all do something Survivor stuff. You know what I mean? Like, it means way less. Yeah.
And also what the players don't realize here, but we do, is that Survivor has infused the idols with a penalty. That is the beware advantage.
Yeah. Yeah. Which could bite you in the butt. So mm-hmm. I do also think that, you know, there's way more risk, and maybe it's way less important than it used to be. You're convincing me, but I also do think that it's still, I don't know, you want to have that extra protection. You want to have that extra cushion, but is it also worth it? That's the thing.
Yeah. I guess my point is that I feel like that the risk is still as great as it's ever been. And I think that the idol has been devalued by Survivor over the course of the last 10 seasons, where I think like gone are the days where, you know, you find an idol, you know, early on in the game and you're able to really just, you know, ride that out without any sort of like negative repercussions of, you know, having the idol.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And is it being more respected now if you have played the whole game like without finding mm-hmm. an idol? Is that a thing that people are valuing more? Yeah, I would think so a little bit.
And on top of that, I mean, Shan and Nasir last season both were voted out specifically because they had idols.
Yeah, yeah. That's also true.
It increases, it's a tool that you have, but it also, you know, is increasing the target on your back. So I would say, you know, still you'd rather have one than not have one.
Yeah, but you don't want the enemy to have one. That's the thing. I feel like there's still that stress of, mm-hmm. oh, you have it in your pocket, I don't have it. But maybe that could benefit you.
It could be a reason to get rid of them. Yeah, it's like, yeah, hey, Shan's got the idol. Don't forget, we got to like make a move now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, this is a great question from longtime patron, Anessa, who asks, based on my experience playing various fan-run live Survivor games, I get away with looking for idols by telling the whole tribe we should all look for the idol to make sure we have it in case there's a swap. We don't want the other guys getting our idol. Make it like a group hunt. Everybody's happy about this because everybody truly wants to have an excuse to go look for the idol without getting stigmatized. But then I hustle and find it myself. I have a knack for it. Are there any other strategies that you could implement to look for idols and not get in trouble? So, yeah, the idea of the group idol hunt, I think, is a good one, especially if you feel like that you have an advantage to be able to find the idols.
Yes, the group idol hunt is a good idea, but I also think that you guys all, you should do it separately and not mm-hmm. all, you know, look together. even though the perception of people looking, going off to look for an idol together would be better, because it's like, oh, they're in a group, they're not looking for an idol. I do think that if you find the idol, you don't want to be around people that's like, oh, do I really want you to really know that I have the idol? Mm-hmm. You know, I think, because that's the problem, is that if you have a group, there's maybe more, there might be more of an incentive for you to want to share it, share that information with people, mm-hmm. which of course we can get into the idea of sharing, you know, the if you have an idol or not. But I also think that, you know, it's most of the time it's best, especially at this point in the game right now, it's I think it's best to kind of just keep that to yourself and not tell anybody that you have the idol, because I think that could just lead to a lot.
Yeah. So, okay, if you find the idol during group idol hunt time, then yeah. if the exercise was, hey, let's, you know, find the idol and then let's all like let everybody know so that we can use it together as a tribe. Now, is this creating a lot of suspicion and turmoil in the tribe when nobody can find the idol?
Yeah, that you could always pin that on someone else, though. Mm-hmm. I think I would think about, you know, of course, we're talking about Survivor right now. But sometimes I think about, I still go back to WWBRD. What would Boston Rob do?
Yeah.
Go back to the Boston Rob rule book. You know, Boston Rob would tell everybody, you know, hey, we all got to look for the, hey, we all got to look for the idol. I'm sorry, I'm doing the impression in front of you.
Sorry.
I don't know. You're way better at it. But, you know, hey, we all got to look for the idol. And then, but Rob finds the idol.
Smarten up.
Yeah, but he's not telling Natalie and Grant, oh, I found it. You know, he's holding that on to himself, you know, because you don't want to tell anybody. I think that's the problem, is that you might have more of an incentive to share that information with people that maybe you shouldn't be sharing it with, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that letting anybody know about what you have, you know, we saw how dangerous it was in season 41 with the whole knowledge is power situation. And then also because of the beware advantages, that the knowledge of having you having the idol ended up making people targets. I mean, I think that it's reasonable to assume that that will happen here also. So I don't love the idea of, you know, then, you know, letting everybody know that you have the hidden immunity idol. You know, the group idol hunt, I think, is a good plan, but I think that still it's too early to do something like that. I think that, like, where, you know, you're Zach and saying, hey, why don't we all look for the idol so the other people don't get it? And Roxroy is like, hey, we're still making the shelter. What are you doing?
We got real.
This guy's worried about the idol.
Man, my kids are, I'm better at dealing with my kids than these people. No, and I do think that also it might make people nervous that you're an idol person. You're thinking about the idol, because especially first impressions are like super, super important in Survivor. And you don't want to be there day one, day two, right, being like, all right, I'm the idol guy. We should all look for the idol. You know what I mean? Maybe if someone else brought that up to you, that'd be different.
Yeah.
But you don't want to be the one to pitch that. Because it's like, oh, right, you're thinking about the game like that? All right, I'll keep that filed away. You know what I mean? It does make you seem a little bit untrustworthy, even if that's not what you're going for. You don't want to, be the idol person. You never want to be the idol guy.
You don't want to
be the guy with the idol.
Survivor guy, yes. Idol guy, no. And just to go back to what Anessa was saying, that I think that as you get closer to where a potential swap would happen, I think that that's the point to say, hey, we might swap. We better find the idol, because we don't want somebody else coming to this tribe and they're going to find the idol if we don't, so let's fan out and make sure that then we're all going to work together, right? You know, it's sort of like can be an exercise to build more of like a cohesive group, even though you are, you know, sort of, very, very much looking out for yourself.
Yeah, I do.
Self-interested.
Think that
with that
swap thing, there's way more of the looming fear of the game and looming fear of the unknown, which just inherently scares people, because that's something that they're not in control of. So I do think that if you kind of have a, hey, look, the game's about to switch up. It's not me. It's the game. We all got to protect ourselves. You know what I mean? I think that that will get people to, you know, want to, you know, look for the idol, but also like that will make them want to trust you more, because it's like, all right, I have you. I don't know these other people that I'm about to swap with. Like, let me actually help try to figure something out and work with you, you know? So I do think that's a good idea.
Phil, I'd love to talk a little bit about the opening of the game.
Yes.
The opening segment where Jeff welcomes in the new batch of survivors, and whether or not you can make a positive or negative impression when you are on the opening mat with Jeff, what do you think about this? Do you think that this is something that people should put some time into thinking about, how they are going to answer any questions Jeff throws at them?
I think you have to definitely say the winner of the game is going to be on this mat right here.
Oh, you like that?
Yeah. You definitely have to, because that'll just, you know, help with the edgic, and that'll help, you know.
Yeah, but it usually helps somebody else from your tribe win. I don't know if it helps the person who says that win.
You should just maybe just say, hey, I'm going to be the winner. No, don't do that. I mean, unless that's something that you think you're very confident in. I don't know. We can definitely overthink that, but I do think that, you know, that's the first perception. And I think that's also something where that's how the other tribes will see you. Sure, your tribe will definitely get to know you way more better than that first impression. But for the other tribe, that's kind of how they're going to see you for the first, you know, however days, 10 days or something like that. So I do think that it might matter a little bit, the way you come off. You definitely don't want to say, hey, I'm a super fan
Well, it's interesting, Jeff, I watched this part back specifically to talk about it. So Jeff goes to Marianne. He's like, woman in the front. She's so excited. And she's
biggest smile ever.
Yeah. She's talking about how, you know, that how great it is for her to be out there. He goes to Mike, and Mike does like, oh my God, can you believe it? Jeff Probst, what are my friends going to think? And then we see, and he asks Mike, what does it take to win the game? And then, you know, Mike answers the question, and then it's like, all right, Zach, what does it take to win the game? It's just like Mike just answered the question, Jeff. And Zach said, we're about to find out. And Jeff's like, well, what does that mean? And so that I think that by Zach, again, I don't think this has anything to do with Zach being voted out of the game, but yeah. I think it's a good exercise to think about when you're going into these situations, this, you know, match at sort of like in your mind, doing the exercise of what is Jeff likely to talk about? And what am I saying when he comes to me? And even if I think it's probably a good exercise to okay, the last question that Jeff asked, how would I answer it? Because in this case, you know, Jeff asked this question to Mike, and then he went to Zach with the same question. And I think that no matter what you say, like Jeff is looking for something that's like that he can like sink his teeth into a little bit. And Zach's answer was just so short, where it was like almost like an awkward interaction with Jeff. And he sort of made a joke of it at the end, like, oh, I just like the way that sounded. But I think you have to just remember, like at Tribal Council and these mat chats, like you have to be prepared to give Jeff a interesting enough answer to get him to move on to the next person.
Yeah. Because I do think that Jeff is looking for a different thing that maybe you are, where Jeff is looking, he's looking to make a TV show. And so for the beginning of the show, Jeff is trying to say, all right, he's trying to introduce the cast. He's trying to get people at home excited for Survivor in the best way he can. But for you, I mean, of course you want to be a good TV, but that's not your main goal. And so I think you can't give Jeff what he wants, and you have to give Jeff what he wants without actually giving away what you want.
And it's hard because I think that you don't want to be the Marianne. Like I don't think Marianne is going to be the winner of this game. Yeah. Just like Christian wasn't the winner in David versus Goliath, and Elaine wasn't the winner in Island of the Idols, that I almost feel like that, you know, Jeff's favorite, you know, as much as people think like, oh, you know, the Survivor is going to put their thumb on the scale for certain people, that, Jeff's favorite, I feel like, is almost never the winner. I mean, I guess maybe you could argue that Tony might have been, but I think that there were other people in the Winners at War cast that are Jeff's favorites more than Tony. Erica, I think, certainly was not, you know, Jeff's favorite from that cast. I'm trying to think of who was the person who was Jeff's go-to person in season 41. Went to Nasir a lot.
Yeah,
but I feel like that you don't want to be the person who Jeff is always talking to. So like, you know, don't go overboard. Don't go crazy. You got to give him something though.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, he might be putting his thumb on the scale, but maybe putting it too much that it, you know, knocks the whole thing out. I don't know where I was going with that.
Yeah, but whereas like that, it's too much attention on you. Yeah. And I think with Survivor, I think, you know, you don't want too much attention.
Yeah, yeah. It makes you seem like you're the main character, and everyone's like, all right, well, you're Jeff's asking you a lot of questions, huh? Maybe you know a little bit more than I do. Maybe you know a little bit more than you should. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you especially starting out the game, you, because I think, you know, people want to be, they, I don't know, because I think that sometimes though people like the idea of having someone that's kind of taking all the shot or, you know, being like getting all the attention from Jeff, and
sure,
you're kind of just someone in the back burner. It's like, all right, I like that Marianne's kind of this person for that Jeff can have,
right?
You know, but
and,
yeah,
and,
but
and also, Marianne will finish in seventh place like Christian and Elaine.
Exactly. They'll reach a point where they're like, we can't take you to the end or we're done because you're literally Jeff's favorite. Mm-hmm. And people, they might not say that, but I think that in the back of their head, that's kind of, you know, again, even if they're not really thinking about it like that, that is kind of what it is. You are the person that Jeff is going to a lot. So I think you have a good chance.
Well, and it's understandable because, you know, survivors are haters.
Yeah, of course.
And they're like, well, oh, this person's definitely getting all the screen time. And it does feel like that, you know, I think that, you know, maybe you can get into the psychology of, you know, you want to please Jeff. You want to, like, you know, get positive encouragement from Jeff, that this is like, okay, I'm also now intuiting, okay, this would be a good winner of the season, that Jeff seems to love this person. Okay, if this person gets to the end, you know, unless that they've had, like, a really, like, terrible social game, and, you know, like, you know, I think that, you know, there's been stories of, like, Mike White, I don't remember if this was on the show or sort of, like, anecdotally about, like, with Christian, it's like, yeah, like, no, we have to, everybody at home is screaming, why aren't you getting rid of this person?
Yeah, 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 exactly. I think that, I don't know, I think that there's kind of two ways we can go about this class is in session, where we're giving advice to people playing Survivor. But it's also like, do we want to give them advice that is just for them to win? Or do we want to give them advice to kind of just be the best survivor all around, including kind of giving off, having a good TV personality? Because I do think we could just totally be like, you know what? Screw what Jeff says. You're playing for you. We don't care if you're on the show or not. Mm-hmm. We just care about you winning. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we're fine with you being a boring winner or whatever.
Okay, so
that
you
may
feel
be
like that we should also be trying to give people, like, okay, how do you win the show also? Not necessarily, yeah, win the season.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think there's two ways you can go about it. And because I do think that for some people that matters way more. Oh, I want to be on the show. I mean, everyone wants to be on the show. Everyone wants to be a very liked person. But I think you could definitely play the game not really caring about the confessionals, not really caring about any of that stuff, and still do very well.
Right.
You know, it's just going to be more boring.
Right.
That's just two ways you can go about it.
Right. But yeah, I mean, ideally, you know, we want to win the show, but also, yeah, I mean, like, with all due respect to, you know, some winner, I don't even need to name them. You know, you can fill in the blank. It's like, okay, if you win and then nobody cares about you because you weren't necessarily good TV, then, you know, what fun is that?
Yeah. Well, who did you really win?
Yeah.
Did you win in our hearts?
Did you win our hearts? You know, and, you know, Chappelle says this all the time. Like, you know, when the famous question of, you know, would you rather, you know, win and be hated or lose and be loved? Like, Chappelle says, you know, all the lose and be loved. Yeah. I think it's more, maybe it's probably a little bit better for Big Brother than Survivor. I mean, Survivor, you're still coming away with, you know, $1 million. Oh, they got it to $750.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that being said, I always say, like, yes, bring the gold, but do it in your confessionals. You have so much time to be one-on-one with the camera, with the producers. And so you don't have to necessarily be the master of ceremonies on the mat.
Yeah. 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 Exactly.
Just give Jeff enough that he has that he feels like, you know, satisfied with the interaction. And then because sometimes Jeff will stay on you. And, yeah. you know, there are many survivors, I'll say, especially like at tribal councils. Again, this was sort of like an innocent exchange with Zach that we're turning into a big deal here. But when you're at tribal councils, you know, if Zach gave Jeff that kind of answer of like what's it going to take to win the game? And he gives something like, so like, a, I guess we'll find out. Like Jeff might stay on him like that. Not good enough. Like, hey, yeah. I need a better answer. And now all of a sudden, now there's a lot of focus on you. And we've seen how these tribal councils can turn.
Yeah. It's the type of thing, I think, you know, Jeff is kind of like HR in a way, where it's like, he doesn't actually have your best interests in heart, and you have to remember that. Mm-hmm. It's more about, he's, you know, HR, they're worried about the business. Jeff is worried about the show of Survivor, mm-hmm. and it's way less about, like, he doesn't actually care about you, or he does care, but he doesn't want you to win. Or mm-hmm. you know what I mean, Jeff? That's not what Jeff is mainly focused on.
He doesn't care if you win or you lose, as long as exactly. it's a good episode, right?
Exactly. So you have to. You can't all try to all buy in on Jeff and try to be that person for Jeff. You can't be that too much because mm-hmm. you got to focus on you. You got to focus on your game.
Yeah. Phil, let's shift gears to another one of our subjects here at the Academy, and let's talk about the subject of just overall alliance making. Alliance structure. We didn't see a ton of this from the other tribes. We really saw this a ton from the Ika tribe in terms of the relationships that were formed and who was working with whom. I guess let me ask this question from our good friend Baby Andy. Baby Andy says, if you start a tribe of six, how aggressive should you be in building a majority? Should you race to lock in an alliance of four or hang back and exploit conflicts? Now, interestingly, I feel like we didn't really even see an alliance of four here.
No, we didn't. It kind of worked out that way but with the votes, but not really. We never really saw that with, and it wasn't really any alliances. Mm-hmm. It was kind of just like a voting block.
Yeah, if anything, I feel like that what we've seen across the board has been voting blocks.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I'm trying to think back to season 41, if that's what happened. Probably like the biggest alliances we saw. Even with Yasa, you know, I think it was like sort of voting blocks where, you know, Evie had Tiffany, Evie had Liana. They had like a, you know, a thing that was all of the women working together, but Liana yeah. didn't really feel great about it. Then Evie had something with, you know, Voce and Xander. But it wasn't necessarily as like close as like, okay, this is the four, this is the five. Even where we had, I'm forgetting, I'm very, very bad on Professor Rob here on the Sean and Danny's tribe was.
Oh, I don't remember.
Yeah, whatever. That tribe. But I don't know if they necessarily, like, it seemed like that, you know, Danny and Deshaun were with Sydney, but it seemed like at different points, like, Nasir was in the group, Erica was in the group, and they're throwing challenges to get rid of Erica. Okay. The teacher's assistant, Sam Moore, Luvu. He's going to tell us. But even to go back to, the tribe with Shannon Ricard, I don't know if they necessarily were, you know, there was, I think everybody thought they were in a voting block with Shan.
Yeah. 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 I think that maybe people are putting less stock in the alliance thing because they know how much the game is going to shift. And they know, I don't know that I feel like there's more just paranoia about not trusting anybody. Even like when you look at Shannon Ricard's relationship, like they might've had a good relationship, but like even with a lot of game stuff, like they mm-hmm. didn't. They butted heads sometimes.
Why do you think that is? Do you think that players are just thinking about the individual game so much from the start that it's hard to sort of like say, like, okay, this is the, you know, this is the five and we're freezing this person out? Does the shot in the dark, do you think, play into that at all?
Maybe. I think there's just a general feeling that you can't trust anyone way more because anyone, and I think everyone kind of, usually I feel like 10 seasons ago, 20 seasons ago, there would like be a few people that would go on the show that would be like the game people. And then everyone else is kind of like, oh, I don't know, I'm here on Survivor, you know. But now I think everyone is kind of way, way more hyper-focused on that, even the people that you wouldn't expect. So because of that, it's there's a feeling of like, oh, everyone's trying to be the David Wright here. Everyone's trying to be, you know, that type of game player, have that game player mindset. I think that will, like, leads to way more distrust. I honestly think that I'm good with the idea of alliances. I feel like, I don't know why, if that is going away. I mean, you know, there's still a lot going to be alliances in Survivor, but I do think that if you find someone, people that you can trust from an early point, like, I feel like you should really try to hold on to that, because, you know, those kind of relationships do what matter way more in Survivor than the voting block kind of fake, oh, I'll work with you for this vote. Because that stuff does, it means nothing. It's just kind of voting together. But if you have some genuine, real, like a bond, like a Tony and Sarah, I mean, you're never going to get that type of Tony and Sarah thing on a new season. But that kind of, that bond, you see how much impact that has on the game.
Focus and, on your one person to start.
Yeah, I think you got to find one person that you can really, really trust a lot.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think the person that played the first week the best was Romeo.
Yeah, yeah,
and we saw Romeo come out there, and Romeo, you know, had the connection with Drea and Roxroy to start. And what's interesting, though, is that Zach in his exit interview with me told me that Roxroy was throwing Drea's name out. Drea, we saw, was open to voting out Roxroy. So I don't think that that is necessarily like an airtight thing. But, you know, Romeo just has, like, so he had the connection with Roxroy, where, you know, he was able to, he was talking about the vote with Roxroy. He was talking about the vote with Drea. We saw him work, we saw him working with Zach. So I don't know if it necessarily needs to be, you know, as formalized as, hey, this is the four. But if you're Romeo and you can count now, all right, I have my 1, 2, 3, 4. And even if, like, the vote, like, turned on somebody, like, in the four, it's still not him. Like he is, like, insulated enough from wherever it's going to, I don't think it needs to be, like, as locked in as, like, this is our, you know, big alliance here in a tribe of six.
Yeah, I definitely think that he did a good job kind of just managing the people and all the stuff that's going on. Because, yeah, you want to make sure you got to always look at your standing and look at where you fit for tomorrow. Because we might vote someone out today, but then it's like, tomorrow, did we just vote out someone that, you know, actually could have benefited me in a way? And just on Romeo in general, I like that he took his foot off the gas this one.
Yeah.
Where he was pushing. Because, like, yeah, he looked at his standing. He's like, all right, I'm not as good with Tori. I'm better with Zach. Let me try to vote out Tori. But when it didn't go his way, he wasn't really adamant about it, which I also think is great that he was kind of just was able to lay back and let that happen.
I think that one of the big mistakes that Zach made was that I felt like that he did. And maybe he, you know, that he would say, like, oh, no, I definitely did try. But I feel like that his connection with Roxroy was seemingly not there, where Roxroy was, like, very adamant of, like, hey, I want to go against Zach. And I think that when we take a look at Roxroy's personality in terms of building the shelter, that person, I think also, like, often, like, how they are about, like, the work ethic, I think is also going to be sort of like how they are about the vote.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a huge connection. People don't, it's way more of a mindless, not mindless, but it's the type of thing where it's like, what do you mean? Why do we got to overthink things?
Let's I'm throwing my weight around. Yeah, don't overthink it. Like, this is it. This is what we have to do. You know, open and shut case.
Yeah, we're doing it for the tribe. So you're saying that Zach should have done more to go to Roxroy? And is that what you said?
I think that, you know, stay on the right side. And I can only go off of my own personal experience here where and one time it worked out good for me and one time it didn't work out so good for me. But that I feel like, OK, the person who's really calling the shots of, OK, this is how things need to be done on the shelter, that I really, you know, identified, OK, Roger is that person and I need to suck up to, because I was, you know, the Zach in my season.
Yeah.
You know, the person who, like, boy, is this guy useful at all? But, you know, okay, so I try to, like, you know, be fun, you know, and try to, you know, entertain everybody with jokes, like, keep the mood light. I'm going to try my best at all times, but I'm really going to be in the pocket of Roger, who is the person who's really bossing. And I'm definitely, unlike Ryan and Dan, who were sort of like, hey, we don't have to listen to this guy. We're going to do our own thing. They would, like, wander off. Roger would just be, like, incredulous. Like, where are these guys? Like, you know, you know, these guys even like, what are they doing? Like, you know. Yeah, and like I could tell that he felt like, okay, well, you are like you know you're a good, nice, hardworking kid. These other punks, I don't know what the what the kids today. Am I right? So that I feel like that person is also like, and we saw where Romeo is like, hey, I think I would get rid of Tori. Roxroy says to him, we're not doing that.
Yeah.
and Romeo doesn't really push back on that, even though he would have preferred to keep. And I think that Romeo identifies, okay, Roxroy's dug in. So yeah. I think that it was a crucial thing for Zach to sort of like win over Roxroy. And Zach did not love Roxroy's company based on what we saw from the episode. But I think he got to overlook that. And who did like win over Roxroy? Swathi. And Swathi seemed like, and maybe she's used to, you know, she's in the Army National Guard, and you know, she's, this is like this, you know, kind of work ethic, you know, doesn't necessarily bother her. And so, and then she, and Roxroy has a conversation with Swathi, and I wrote this down. She, he says to like, okay, well, what do you want to do? And she said, well, she basically gives him the Sandra. She says, anybody but me. He's like, okay, but who would you go after? So she gives the Sandra. Yeah. He presses her for a name. She gives him a name. And that name is, and obviously that was the name that he wanted, because she's like, and then she's like, well, you know, I don't know. He said, no, don't overthink it. Don't overthink it. Like, make this simple.
Please don't. I'm very tired. I just did a challenge and I built a shelter.
But you know, but Swathi, and look, it was both of them on the puzzle. They did that for some. And I want to come back to Zach and the puzzle. But you know, Roxroy felt like, okay, Swathi is the person is the loyal number for me. Yeah. And we're gonna like you know, perhaps in another world where you know, Zach was, you know, very much making Roxroy feel like, okay, I have another, like these are my soldiers here.
Yeah.
That I think that you could see that Roxroy was the one who was going to be most like, you know, throwing his weight around here in the early part of the game. Just to go back to Survivor All-Stars also, where I also was the Zach in a 6-person tribe. I identify, okay, Rob is the person, and you know, it always like people say, oh, Boston Rob got you voted out. But I really believe, like, not really. Really, it was, I think that Rob could have gone. Rob could have gone a number of different directions. He could have voted out Sue. He could have voted out Alicia. I think it was Amber was the person that was like much more pushing for, hey, no, vote out Rob's sister Nino.
No like, brainer.
Yeah. Where if, and had I done a better job in that spot of like, you know, because I was only focused on, okay, I'm, you know, like I'm a number for Rob. I wasn't thinking enough about like, okay, well, who are the other like stakeholders in this? And am I doing a good enough job of winning them over? You know, I was like coming off as way too annoying to the Ambers and Alicias at the time. And that's bad on me. But, you know, so it's not Roxroy alone, you know, like had, had Zach won over Roxroy and Drea or Romeo really been saying, no, I'm telling you, like, this is the thing. Maybe they convince him if it's a 50-50.
Well, that's the thing is that I think Romeo is someone, you know, I think we're going back to just being self-interested. Like, Romeo is someone who's way more focused on his game than he is about protecting. Like, unfortunately, like, that's just the way it is. You're going to focus on you more than other people. But someone like, not saying that Roxroy is not self-interested, but I think that Roxroy is someone that's just more clear with what they want. And that's someone that you sometimes might want to align with earlier on the game because, you know, they're going to help. They're inherently Romeo is not, he might want to help you, but he's not focused on you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But working with someone like Roxroy, you know, Roxroy is going to be way more clear. All right, you're my guy. You're just going to be my guy. And that's kind of it. I don't want to think about it anymore. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so they're going to want to protect you way more than. So that's maybe was a problem with the people that Zach wanted to align with, but also, you know, it didn't work out for him this time.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think that maybe that's something clear that you should, if you feel like you're on the bottom, you got to go to the person on the top and really just suck up to them as much as you can, like you and Roger, and really just try to, you know, be the junior deputy.
But now Butch was very much a worker around the camp, but he wasn't like as much as the person who was like being more demanding. Like he was like, you know, working. And then he would be like incredulous if other people weren't working, but he wasn't like demanding anybody right. was. And he definitely wasn't like that with the vote. Roger was the much more of the taskmaster and also the person driving the vote throughout his entire time in Survivor the Amazon. Can I talk to you about the Tori? A lot of people were focused in on Tori this week and some of the things that she did to make a positive first impression, bringing up Harry Potter with the young people. Well, what did you think about that? And did you feel like it was effective?
I think maybe she came off a little strong, maybe a little bit. You know, she was real, but I can't blame her for really trying to like, she's trying to make a connection with people. She's really trying to find anything she can. Oh, you guys are nerds. Yeah, I'm a nerd too. And I liked that. I liked that she kind of like was trying to match the energy of other people, but also was the one that was keeping the momentum on that relationship building really going, you know?
Yeah. I like the idea, but I feel like in practice, I'm not so sure it worked. In terms of what she was doing, because that ultimately, you know, we see her with like, okay, this is how I'm going to connect with the other young people. And we end up with a situation where her and Zach are gunning for each other by the end of. So it like should we saw the attempt, but for whatever reasons, like it did not hold.
Yeah. Well, we saw her really try to being the one to approach Zach and Swathi, you know, but I think. Like we didn't see that as much with her relationship with like Romeo and Rox.
Yeah, we didn't really see any interaction between Romeo was actually the one pushing to get rid of Tori. Now maybe where it did help, I want to be fair to Tori, was that Zach felt comfortable enough to tell her, Dre is talking about you. Dre is saying that you are out looking for the idol, which then she was able to sort of pivot to then confronting Drea. And I really loved what, you know, but Drea and Tori coming together and instead of going after each other saying like, okay, let's work together. I actually think that it is a interesting strategy of like to sort of like pick out somebody in front of the group and say like, hey, I need to talk to you one-on-one because everybody's like, ooh. But then actually you take that and like work together from that.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I think that's like, oh, everybody thinks we're at odds, but we're actually going to work together on something. I mean, they came up with a bad plan to vote out Rox Roy.
Yeah. And they, of course, they vocalized that, which maybe, you know, that's something that they could use later. I think, you know, Tori could use that information later on, which could be a little bad. But I do like that. Yeah, they still had it seemed like a very genuine connection and conversation with one another.
But I think that Tori probably like with because she was like so like, hey, watch this. I'm going to, you know, use my powers of charm and, being able to like I'm toying with these people. And I'm going to talk about Harry Potter.
I'm a therapist.
I'm a caretaker. Wink. Where she like, I don't think you need to have it be that like Machiavellian. Like I think that really what you should just be doing, like, you know, be with these people. Not that I'm the expert in making friends, Phil.
You really sound like it, Rob. You sound like you're just the king of social situations.
Yeah, but
yeah, you could.
I think, you know, just like I don't think you have to like be that calculated in terms of like enjoy these people's company. Like get to know them. Let them get to know you. And, you know, you don't have to be so like calculated about it like that. And I think that it's, you know, we were overcomplicating it. Like make friends with everybody.
Yeah. And I think that people can sometimes read that energy too. Sometimes people can see that, okay, you're really trying. You seem pretty, you know, insecure in your standing or whatever. You seem like you really are pushing for this rather than someone's energy that just is like a calming, good presence to be around,
yeah.
you know, and just in general, where it's like, all right, I don't really got to think about you because I know you're cool, you know, like it way more than like, all right, you got to get away from me. You're trying a little bit too hard. I think sometimes, yeah, you can push it a little bit too much. That might go against what you want.
People don't want to feel like that you're, you know, this is like, oh, I have a list of sales calls that I'm making today. And, you know, you feel like you're being sold to and you're just like, okay, well, and they're moving on from talking about this to like going on to the next person. But I think that, you know, what's really the most important is like, you know, having a good relationship with all the other members of the tribe, not necessarily like one or two. And singling, you know, some people out for that's who you're going to vote out. I think you just want to have as many numbers as possible for whatever is going to come.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically. Yeah. And I also think that, I don't know, just because you talked with someone about Harry Potter doesn't mean that they're going to keep you around. You know, you got to, you got to find, those deeper things, but also, just don't think about it as much. Just be okay. Just be chill. Just be a good presence.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit of going back to the puzzle with Zach. And so I caught something interesting when I went back and watched the episode again this morning to talk about this. So going into the challenge, okay, Jackson gets removed from the game. So we're going to have only five people. Okay, so we have somebody sit out. Romeo gets to sit out instead of Zach. And I was just thinking about this, like, nobody's mad at Romeo for sitting out of the challenge. And I don't know, we didn't get to see any talk about, like, who should sit out, Romeo or Zach. And I wonder if it changes anything if Romeo is in the challenge and Zach isn't. But I get the sense, and again, this is completely, you know, Zach, if you're listening, maybe I have this all wrong. Mm-hmm. I get the sense that Zach wanted to be in the hero spot doing the puzzle and maybe might have overpromised about his abilities with the puzzle.
Yeah. He talked about how he did practice the puzzles before the season, right? Like I remember he did say that he put a lot of practice, but it didn't work out, you know, the way he did it. He practiced it. But I do think that because of that, he went into it way more of like, I'm going to be the puzzle guy. Cause I also think that has something to do with perception. You know, you see, you know, it's like, who's like, when you look at someone who's like, you know, is more built like rocks or someone like that versus someone, you know, like Zach, it's like, all right, Zach, you're the puzzle guy. You're the skinny young guy. Usually, you know, that's kind of the way it works out, that like this, maybe the smaller people end up being the puzzle people, you know, maybe the people that are perceived as more nerdy or something like that. You know, no shade, Zach, you know, I'm here too, but I think that because of that, he went all in on the way people are going to look at you, which isn't a bad thing, but I think if you do that a little bit too much, you can oversell your actual abilities of just who you are as a person on your own. Right.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Phil, I want to play the clip. Here is Zach after the challenge, talking about, you know, what it's like not getting the puzzle done.
You're the second person to leave Survivor 42.
I know that the puzzles are a place that I can prove myself, but I've never been more exhausted in my entire life. And at that point, everything that you memorize about a specific puzzle just goes out of the window.
Everything that you memorize. About a specific puzzle just goes out the window. I wonder, did Zach say to everybody, hey, I've memorized this puzzle. I know exactly how it's going to, and put me in there. I got this.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's the thing, is that maybe it's not you. Wait, this is for all the kids who are trying to be on Survivor. It's not just about memorizing how Survivor puzzles have worked in the past.
Mm-hmm.
It's about having that real, like, just puzzle knowledge and being able to just do that on your own. You know what I mean? Like, without having to memorize that, because that can cripple you sometimes when you're so tied to stuff that people did in the past rather than just actually being good at puzzles.
And Phil, we saw Evie last season. Now, Evie was like, hey, I've got the hack for now. I don't know if Evie promised their group that Don't worry. I know the hack for this. I don't know what hack necessarily there is for this, and I don't know how, like if there's like a miniature version of this puzzle and Zach had this, but it seems to me based on what he says about it doesn't matter, you know, how much you've memorized the puzzle. And then when he comes back and really falls on his sword about it, like I really just got this because I couldn't understand the first time I'm watching. I'm like, well, they were losing by a lot. Why, like, why is he like taking all of the blame? Even like, and Tori says, like, yeah, good job on the puzzle today. I'm like, oh, why is everybody being so hard on Zach about the puzzle? But I am wondering, did he sort of like, you know, really, you know, pat himself on the back of like, hey, I'm the ultimate super fan. Yeah. I've memorized this puzzle. I think that much more impressive is if you don't tell people you memorized the puzzle.
Exactly.
And it's like, hey, you know, I think I've got a knack for puzzles. I'll give it a shot. I'll give it a go. And sort of like build yourself like an exit ramp if it doesn't work out, as opposed to like, no, this is a sure thing. I've got this.
Yeah, because you're making promises you can't keep, and you don't know if you can keep them yet. You can't promise people the world like that. That oh, so yeah, I got. You never want to just. This is just also just advice for people. You never want to upsell your challenge abilities at all. I think unless you're Ozzy, you know, because I think it's always better when it's a surprise that you won rather than oh, okay, this person. Like if you say you got it, then we're putting it all our chips are on you. You're gonna save us. And when you don't save us, you know, you screwed us.
Yeah.
Definitely never. I think, but I also think that maybe Zach felt like that was his only way of
I'm going to be the hero. I'm going to be the hero. But so I think that for Zach in that spot, he felt like he could do it. I think it's okay to take the spot unless there was somebody else, like, you know, Roxroy was like, hey, let me do the puzzle. And then he was like, no. Trust me, I got this. But I think if that spot is up for grabs, there were two spots. I think he could have got one and maybe not overpromised. And again, this is complete supposition on my part.
Yeah, but maybe his standing was so bad that he felt like that was his only way of redemption. Hail
Mary.
He needed to be the hero.
Look, and again, as I can relate to this in Survivor All-Stars, where I felt like not so great about my position in the tribe. That we got the treasure box and then there was like a third key that we needed to find for the treasure box. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to put myself in the hero spot where I'm going to be the person to go find the key. And it was buried in the sand. And then, so I got up and I took the shovel and I said, I'll dig the whole beach up. I'm going to be the one to find the key. This is going to be my hero moment. And they painted it out like, Sestanino, what is he, that his kid is playing on the beach with a panel. They're like, oh, I'm sorry that I was like, I'm sorry, I'm working too hard to try to find the key. And like eventually, like the producers are like had to like be like, actually, you guys are digging in the wrong spot. They're like, okay, you're never gonna find this. They were like, okay, I would suggest digging over here. And then of course, like Rob does it, and then the episode is like, Boston, really, Sestanino, what an idiot. It's like they told him where to like dig up the thing. But anyway, but I think that that's the wrong mindset to be like, hey, I'm going to, you know, hit a 13-run home run right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess. Yeah. He felt like that was his only. But it's also the thing where if everyone's looking at you already. Sometimes you can't win unless you do, you know, find the key or unless you do win the puzzle. It's going to be very hard to get out of that spot regardless, because everyone's laser focused on you anyways. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So maybe it's not, you don't really want to put yourself out there if you're already the one that's kind of out there. You don't want to put yourself out there even more and further isolate yourself way more, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Josh Green had asked us, is it a definite no-no to sit out the first challenge? We've seen not this season, but others, people who sit out get voted out. I mean, it was worked out fine for Romeo to sit out the first challenge.
Yeah.
Worked out fine for Lydia. So
if you feel like you're someone that needs to prove yourself, then I think you should compete. But I guess Romeo, people felt, I mean, we'll see how it goes on, but I think people feel more comfortable with Romeo's challenge abilities, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the Shipwheel Island. Okay. First, with Schiphol Island, I noticed that there was like a some hesitation where you know, there was like a, I think it was the Orange Tribe. Nobody wanted to go. And Marianne's like, I'll go as long as you're not going to like vote against me. Do you want to go to Shipwheel Island or you don't want to go to Shipwheel Island?
You don't want to go to Shipwheel Island.
Oh, interesting. Because I feel like you do.
Real. I mean, yeah, you might get an advantage, but also that is like, it's literally the idol thing where it's like, all right, you went off to go look for, you definitely, you, there's a chance you have something because you did that. And anyone, if someone's desperate enough, they could be like, well, Marianne went to Shipwheel Island. She might have something, you know, we never know.
Yeah.
And I do think that just having that clear, like, thing that you did go off on and everybody knows that, that's just not a good target to have on your back. I think it's better if you're at tribe chilling with everybody.
I'm just trying to think back to, did it help people or did it hurt people in season 41 to go to Shipwheel Island? So in the first episode, Xander, JD, and Danny went. Danny didn't get an advantage. Xander and JD did. Now, for JD, the hiding and lying about his advantage did somewhat directly lead to him being voted out of the game.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, so that one did yeah, it didn't work in his favor. I mean, I don't know if it was ever, but was it ever because of the, like, the going to Shipwheel Island?
It wasn't because he got that extra vote at Shipwheel Island.
Yeah.
And then he lied to Shan and Ricard about it. And then they caught him in a lie. I think that that was sort of like the straw that broke the camel's back for JD. So I think it's not necessarily the going. I think it's the lying where Xander came back last season and he went and he was like, just like, I told them exactly what happened. And he risked his vote and we'll find out what happens. And nobody ever seemed to be, I mean, I guess Liana was like eternally like annoyed with Xander, but it didn't really end up working bad for him. You know, we saw where, like, especially like later on in the pre-merge, when Liana and Shan go there, that ends up sort of setting off the knowledge is power saga. But like, I don't think it was necessarily the fact that they went there. I think it was sort of like, again, the lying about what came back. So I feel like it's not the going. It's the lying that is the problem when people run into the problems. Even going back to Island of the Idols. Now, Tommy, who won the season famously, did not go to Island of the Idols. But for everybody else, the only person who went to Island of the Idols and got voted out in the same episode was Vince. Also, Brad went to the summit in the same episode that he got voted out. But I don't know if there's causation there.
I think that, you have to know yourself and you have to know, you know, the type of person that you are and the type. Do you think you're good at lying? Do you think you're good at, you know, really making putting people at ease and making people feel comfortable? Or do you think that you're going to just stress people out? Because I think it maybe it's a case by case basis. You know what I mean? Maybe, you know, if you're someone that, you know, you can't do that and you know, you're going to slip up and say something, then don't go. Then, you know, really try to hang back or something like that. Mm-hmm. But if you feel like you are good at kind of like making people feel more comfortable, then I think it's okay to go, you know, because you can know you can cover your bases later on, you know?
Is it such a big deal to hide if you have an extra vote?
Does it make you a big target
that, ooh, you have an extra, like, especially like if you come back and you're like Xander last season, I went to go and so I might have an extra vote now.
I think people are looking for anything. You know what I mean? I genuinely think that, you know, it doesn't really matter what it is. People will find a reason to, we got to vote out Xander because Xander found out. Xander has that extra vote. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So having any kind of game thing that people can point to is never a good thing. Idols, extra vote, doesn't matter. People will use it, you know?
Are we sure about that? Like, I know like an idol is still sort of like the red line. But to me, I wonder, short of like, oh, it's just an extra vote. It's, you know, just a, you know, the like ability, like especially like when it's like a known thing in the game. I wonder if there's just the game is so oversaturated with advantages. Is the lie the bigger problem than that's just, I have this. It's not a big deal. I just have a thing. We're going to use it if it's a swap or a merge, and this is going to help us.
It depends, though, because I think that if Zach went to, you know, if he went to the island and then he came back with an extra vote and told people straight up, I have an extra vote, I think, you know, Rox would probably be like, all right, we got to vote this guy out. Mm-hmm. I do though think that maybe the extra vote holds way more weight in, you know, as we dwindle down the numbers. I mean, we're in small tribes now, mm-hmm. so maybe that has an effect. It depends on how big the tribe is. Like, I bet extra votes really don't matter if you're in a tribe of 10, or maybe even if the game's starting out, or when you hit the merge. But I do think that as the numbers get dwindled down, those extra votes do end up meaning something more, mm-hmm. Way more.
Yeah.
Later on.
It's tricky. I think that I would say that I'm more like, I think if you can figure out a way to go, I think you should go.
Yeah. 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 Just to have that, just because you don't know, you want to have, and I guess it's more of an excuse. Is it better, do you think, to sneak off, say, hey, I'm going to go look for some firewood and then go find idols? Or is it better to just try to go, to the Advantage Island? What do you think?
I think the Advantage Island is probably better because that, one, there's no guarantee that you are going to find the idol. Going to Advantage Island is at least a 50% chance that you're coming back with an advantage. And also you have the opportunity to potentially meet allies that are on the other tribes. It didn't always work out in season 41. I mean, we saw that Evie and Deshaun got something going, and then, but based on the way that the tribes were split up because of the Hourglass twist, that didn't really ever bear any fruit. But, Evie has said that they felt like that, had they been at the merge with Deshaun under different circumstances, that would have been a powerful alliance. We saw Xander and Danny have a relationship basically all through the game because of like their encounter at Shipwheel Island. We also saw where Liana and Shan end up like meeting like cross tribe because of that. Sydney and Tiffany, even though on the episode it looked like that they had some beef, that they were actually, that they made a bond of, going to one of these summits. So I think that there's a lot to gain there. And I feel like there's not that much downside until you get caught in a lie.
Yeah. Yeah. Until something like that screws you. I think with season 41, like with that information, yes, I definitely think with Liana and Shan, they had I do think that was something that was strong. You know what I mean? That they built there.
Yes.
But I'd also don't know. You can't put too much weight on that stuff either, though, because it's you don't really actually know these people. You can't. Yeah, but I it's good to have the opportunity to see people, but also I just think don't put too much weight on that because you can't really trust these people. Mm-hmm. You don't really know who they are. Yeah. You don't know. Yeah, it might stab you in the back 5 minutes later.
You don't know. You don't know. Yeah. But I think that it's probably better to go if you can and not make enemies in your tribe being the person. Like if nobody's well, somebody step up to the plate. All right, I'll do it for the group. I'll go.
Yeah.
Pick me. I volunteer as tribute. And sort of keeping with this idea of advantages and cross-tribal alliances, let's talk about the new thing that came up this week, and that is this Advantage Amulet, which thematically I feel like is very similar to the three phrases going on. It feels like that Survivor really likes the idea of, you having these situations involving other players. I think that we should only assume there will be more of that going on in the future. We've seen this slowly come into the game, even going back to season 40, where you found the advantage, but you have to give half of the advantage to somebody else for a day and tell that they want people, even going back to season 30, where let's send two people share the lie of the, neutral box. I think that they love the idea of people having to, share a secret.
Yeah, yeah. Even with the last season with the phrases at when you say before the challenge.
Right.
Like that kind of stuff.
And even like the prisoner's dilemma of risk your vote, protect your vote. Like, okay, well, can you really trust the person? Like, can you share the secret of like, of what happened here? So that, I think that look for more of that, just in your mind in future seasons of Survivor. The three players that found the thing, do you feel like that this is an opportunity for them to be working together, or is this a curse that they are going to be going after each other even more?
I think most of the time it would end up being, I mean, of course it depends on the situation. It depends on, you know, everyone's standing, but I do think that even this kind of thing will backfire. And I think unless there's like a really close bond between some of these people, I think we'll end up being as like, all right, I know that, they might have something, they might have an advantage, and so we got to get them out. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And you can really kind of cover your bases. And I think even with this, it's about the lying. And I think it's way more about the way you, you know, come across after you go through this kind of advantage thing. And it's like, how are you going to cover your tracks, and how are you going to make sure that other people don't really, you know, that other people aren't like, you know, caught to the scent of what you may or may not have, you know?
Yeah. Phil, as I was watching this back, I was just wondering, like, do you think that this will change anything? Do you feel like that these players will, either work together more, or B, either target each other more, or will everybody just play their own game and just hope that they're the last person standing?
I think they'll do that until they all, I think when they meet, this might mean something. I do think that once we get some kind of swap, because we do see this a lot, I think, in Survivor, where it's like the first episode, oh, we're setting something up, this is going to be huge. And then like for the rest of the season, they're like, that stuff doesn't really matter. But I do think here, because there is the shared information, like that shared information will, I think, eventually lead to something where you'll have a reason to target someone, or you'll have a reason to work with someone. I do think that all that little stuff, it does matter. And I do think it does affect the game, and it does make people, I don't know, it changes the relationships. And I do think it will mean something eventually. And I just think it will probably lead to more. It will lead to someone getting voted out more than it will lead to, you know, a great alliance being formed, you know?
Yeah, I think it's tricky, because it's the kind of thing where, you know, you might have like an alliance in your group. You might have like, okay, you have a group of three, and now all of a sudden you get to the merge, and now you have like this other like ulterior motive of like, okay, I'm either A, trying to work with this other random person, or I'm trying to get the votes onto this other random person, and my group, my core group, doesn't know. And I do think it's the kind of thing that invites you to get blown up on this. And I don't know necessarily like how much upside there is to try to be like engineering these vote outs just so you are going to end up getting this idol. I kind of feel like if you luck into you're the last person standing, you get an idol. But I don't know how much we'll see these players like or maybe they might try it. But I think it might be a mistake to really go out of your way to try to, you know, win on this side quest, as I called it on the Know-It-Alls the other night.
Yeah, I think if the opportunity is given to you, you might want to take it way more.
If it's like a 50-50 shot of like, should we vote out Lindsay tonight or Jonathan? Like, why not Lindsay? We'll get Jonathan next time.
I do think that stuff does matter, you know, even if it's that little stuff. Because people, I think it's, you never want people to know some secret information that you have on Survivor, unless it's someone you trust, mm-hmm. you know. But I do think that it's like, I never want someone who I don't, this dude knows my secrets. I don't know what, like, I don't want you to know that. I want you out of here. And I want to be the one holding, you know, I want it to be the one with the advantage at the end.
Right.
You know?
So can't you just see like at a tribal council where somebody is like, I've got some interesting news about Hai, that he's actually been in an alliance with me since day one when we, and like, whoa, oh, like, now all of a sudden, like tribal, like I could definitely see, you know, like a truth bomb getting dropped a la like, Deshaun last season, which like sends up like a live tribal council.
Yeah, I. But also, then you got to make sure that then the targets still aren't on you, where you might give that truth bomb, but it's like, wait a minute, did So, like, if Hi said that about Drea or something like that, then would people also be looking at Hi being like, wait, so you have that advantage amulet too? Like, you gotta figure out a way where you can put a target on someone else entirely, but make sure that your plate is clean.
Yeah.
Make sure
that I think it's very interesting as a viewer. I just think that we could see players getting crossed up on this in terms of like, I don't know how hard I would be focused on, you know, turning my key into an idol at the risk of like not always doing what was best for my game. I think that if there's like a chance and the opportunity comes up where again it's like a 50-50 ball and you end up playing like, okay, well, like why not Drea? But even like to work with them. I think that like a bit like why are we all of a sudden we working with these people if it's not like if it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. You got to package it in a certain way. I definitely think that you never want to put too much stock in the new advantages anyways. Like we saw like what happened with like Nick in season 40 with the fire tokens where it's like he put way too much more weight on.
I got loaded pockets. Yeah.
And that stuff didn't end up really meaning
that much.
Didn't
mean anything. Yeah.
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 So you want to don't put too much. Don't just calm down. You don't got to put too much weight. Don't put too much stock in anything really. Just besides the relationships. That's the most important thing.
Okay.
And I also think just one more thing. I do think that, you know, they're putting all that blood and all that mud on them and stuff like that. And someone was like, hi, like, are you bleeding? And he's like, yeah, I think that might cost him later on where they're like, well, I mean, maybe it didn't, but it was weird for him to say that. Cause it's like, wait, were you like, where are you bleeding? Like, I don't actually, where's the cut?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, they could have lied, said they were crawling through something, some blood, you know what I mean? They could have figured out a better lie than that.
Yeah. I think that if it was going to cause my, I think we would have gotten it in the first episode,
right.
But we'll see. That was such a great moment. Okay. A couple other quick things. Okay. Mike Christensen says, obviously Zach is a super fan. What are the things super fans go into the game thinking that they need to do that actually kill their games? And you know, we saw with Zach that, you know, knowing everything that happened on Survivor in the past is one thing. And it could be useful in terms of being able to predict like what's coming next. But I just think it's really important for somebody, and the people, of course, that are listening to this, they're all super fans. And I wonder if it's even less of an advantage now where that almost everybody that's on the show has seen a ton of Survivor. Yeah. It's not like that you're going out there with a bunch of actors who have no idea where you have a big advantage. I don't think that means as much anymore to be a Survivor super duper fan. I think what you need to remember is just sort of like the people. Even though I talked about this with Gabby, is the social game becoming more important or less important? I think that just the sort of like, because it's so quick and so much like gut and you want to be trying to, and it's hard because we're like saying like, oh, Tori, like she's trying too hard in terms of getting people to like her. But I think that's still the most important Survivor skill set.
Yeah. I mean, I think with what you're talking about, like, I think, you know, the social game might seem it's way less intense, or it might seem like it's less important, but I think the intensity of the game in general is way higher at all levels. You know what I mean? So maybe it's still 50-50 between social skills and, or, you know, not 50-50, but there's an equal, like, percentage ratio for, like, the social game versus the advantages. But I think it's all, like, just way more intensified and way more, you know, fast-paced in general. Mm-hmm.
I don't know, like, if there's that much you can do to change up, like, whether people like you when they meet you or at first. Yeah. Like, that's hard to say. But I think that, I guess, what you would want to try to do is maybe keep the things that are most authentic about you. Don't try to pretend to be a different person that you're not. I mean, look at Marianne, who, you know, says like, okay, you know, embrace your inner weirdo, and, you know, and try to, you know, and have fun. And, you know, like her energy is electric. Yeah. Again, that's not, everybody doesn't have that. It's hard to coach that. I think that just, you know, And if you are a Survivor super duper fan, then just really, I think, enjoy, you know, your experience of being on Survivor and hope that that sort of like ends up where people gravitate to you. Because if you're having fun and you're enjoying yourself, I think other people will want to also be part of, you know, like when Suri has like a, is, you know, smiling, even though she doesn't like the leaves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think like you need to, because I do think that definitely the game has changed a lot since you were in the Amazon, where it's like, you know, you were the person that knew like everything about the show and everyone else kind of didn't really know that much. So you were able to do so much more. But mm-hmm. now, yeah, everyone does kind of have that information. So I think it is way more about, you got to have some confidence. I think you got to have like, you got to be confident, but also just assured in yourself. Not maybe not overconfident, but you know, I think people will be able to read the vibe of someone's like, oh, like this person's very anxious, or this person is like very desperate, or this person is like, you know, trying to, you know, like this person is very insecure. This person. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
And so like, I think that a lot of super fans kind of go into the game with that, like, all right, I'm on Survivor. You know what I mean? I gotta do all these things, like all of my favorite winners.
My checklist. Yeah.
Yeah. You gotta go through the checklist, and they force it, you know, when it's really, you gotta be, look at the board, see where you fit, and just chill. It's okay.
And I think like Marianne was talking about how, you know, it's her dream to be on Survivor, and she's going on the roller coaster with her arms up in the air. I think that your superpower then is your passion for being on Survivor. Whether things are going well, whether things are going poorly, whether the weather is good, whether the weather is bad, whether, you know, you have a Rox Roy barking orders at you, I think use that passion to sort of, you know, exude, you know, an energy of like, I'm having so much fun, and this isn't this great. And I think that the more fun you're having, I think the other more people are going to be continuing to gravitate towards you.
Yeah, definitely so. Especially, if you're kind of like a younger person like Zach or something like that. That's kind of something where it's like, oh, look at this kid. Mm-hmm. They're really living life for the first time. Let me, you know, help take them under my wing, that kind of thing.
Yeah, show and people that you're having fun, as opposed to, you know, like show everybody how much you know about Survivor.
Yeah. But also, just match the energy of everyone else too. You know what I mean? If everyone else is giving one kind of thing, you want to, you know, make sure that you're with them. It's a really case by case basis, but you have to know. I think that's a skill that maybe it's harder to teach, you know, than just being a super fan, because it really depends on when you go there. You need to make sure that your energy is kind of in sync with everyone else's. Otherwise, you know, you're going to have a harder
time. Because ultimately, you're there with 18 people. Only one person's going to win. So worst case scenario is you're making the most out of your once in a lifetime experience.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. And then do we want to talk about Kat Ford? When and why should you volunteer for a hero challenge, like the first leg of the reward challenge or the sweat or savvy test? I mentioned this with Chappelle on the feedback show. I did think that the challenge, the jailbreak challenge, that should always be going to the tallest person on your tribe. That I think that, you know, for with Mariah and High and Rox Roy, I just think that Rox Roy has a big advantage there of the longest reach to be able to, you know, stick his arm out and, you know, have like less sticks to have to tie up to do that.
Yeah. I mean, unless you're like there's a Boy Scout on the tribe that knows how to tie a great knot. Yeah. You know,
and Chappelle mentioned this also, that I think that's probably a skill that people don't practice, is tying, you know, what are the best knots to tie in it's not a totally like useless thing for Survivor in terms of like building the shelter. You know, it might not be the worst thing to watch a YouTube video about, like tying knots.
I think, you got to know what you're good at. You got to know your strengths. And I think that's what Zach was trying to do with his puzzle stuff. But it just, it didn't work out for him.
And Gary Hogan asks, should you always just straight up admit your real occupation, Phil?
Let me know. I don't think so. This is also the thing. You have to know if you're going to be good at lying about it. Definitely. I mean, people say this all the time. Pick something that you think you can lie about. You know what I mean? Because if you have a lot of knowledge about that, if you work with construction workers all the time, and you feel like you'll be able to, you know, BS that, then say that, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Because I think that's probably better. It's better to say that you're a construction worker than you're a cop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you don't pick something random. But I also don't think I don't subscribe to the idea that it's like, oh, just be honest in who you are. Because I think people will, you know, it depends on the job you have where they might be like, all right, you know how to talk to people. You know how to do this certain thing. And I don't trust that.
You know? I think you can always just water down what you're doing where like Dr. Jill in Survivor Nicaragua told people she was a nurse. I think Reagan in Big Brother 16 was a professor and I think said that he was a teacher's aide. So if you have a job that you feel like and maybe that there are other positions like a police officer, which for various reasons, like if people felt like, okay, you know, I don't like police officers, or police officers are going to like, going to be, like prying in my business, for whatever reason. I think that might be a tough one where like Brett, came up with something that was, he thought he could sell, but really couldn't. I don't know necessarily like what, like the, you know, maybe like, you know, if you don't want to say you're a police officer, if you say you are like, what's it called? Like the person that like does like the, like checks your, the parking meters. Like, I don't know. Is there
traffic cop? Or
or a crossing guard. Like, yeah, I feel like that you could find things that, are sort of like adjacent.
Yeah, exactly. The water.
But don't
down.
Straight up lie and say you're something different than you actually are.
Yeah, exactly. Because then you, or at least not even do the research. Just don't do it. I think, even if you mm-hmm. look up everything you can about the specific occupation you have, someone's going to put you into a corner one day and you're not going to know what to say. And then it changes like that. You know, if you say the wrong thing one time, you know, those red flags definitely go off.
Yeah, ideally, don't do it.
Yeah. So caretaker is a good alternative.
I don't know what a caretaker is, Phil. Like, I know when Debbie Wanner, one of her jobs was caretaker to nuns, but like caretaker,
at least you knew what it was for.
Caretaker makes it sound like she works like in like a hospice.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was like she working at a nursing home or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, well, I don't know what that really means. But maybe, I mean, yeah, I wonder if what the watered down version of therapist. Maybe she could say she worked at a therapist's office. She works the front desk.
Or I'm going assistant. To school to become a therapist. Like, it's like, okay, well, like, I'm so worried about the person who's in school to become a therapist. Like, I don't know, even a therapist. Like, it worked fine for Denise.
Yeah, exactly. She might have been overthinking that a little bit too much.
A little bit. All right. Well, Phil. Anything else that you want to say of what we've learned here from week one of Survivor?
No. I mean, I'm just super like excited to just be learning more about the new form this show is taking, because then we'll be even better at this. You know, next season, you know,
and we can update the syllabus.
Exactly. It is changing. We're keeping it fluid here.
Yes. Okay. Well, next week we will talk certainly more about the Beware Advantage. I think, right? That's going to come up eventually.
Yeah, probably. Like that.
But I really enjoyed this conversation, Phil. I thought this was really, really fun, and definitely felt like a different gear than I'm normally doing on the podcast. So I feel like that was in my mind, I feel like that if I know like what this podcast is supposed to be in this podcast, it sort of makes it easier to say, all right, this is what we're covering on the recap show. This is the feedback show, and this is what we're talking about covering in Survivor University.
Yeah, I like that this has
Academy.
Its own little
it's very
thing.
Academy.
Yes, yeah, Academy. Yeah, they were doing is that the British thing? Do that, or that's you know
I thought
you,
it sounds
you go to
more
university.
Like hoity-toity. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay,
oh, Academy. Yeah,
great. Yes. All right, and of course, if you're listening to us in the main feed, we can do a feed drop for this episode. Let everybody know what's going on here. You could hear this every week in our patron podcast feed over at robinswebsite.com/patron. One of the many benefits you can get to become a patron of Robin's podcast, including becoming a part of this amazing community, and also all of our patron original shows, not to mention access to Survivor Australia, Australian Survivor, Big Brother Canada, we make it very easy for you to watch, and much more over at robinswebsite.com/patron. Phil, what's coming up for you?
I don't know what's coming up for me. I made a film, and I'm going to a film festival for anyone who's in Chicago. was April 2nd, pull up to the Onion City Experimental Film Festival. I'll be there. We can hang out. We'll get to watch some cool stuff. But besides that, no, I'm just chilling, just watching Survivor. I don't even know.
Okay. Well, Phil, it's always so much fun for me to get together. Hope we can do it again soon. Anytime you want to come back and speak at the Academy, you're welcome.
Oh, wow. Thank you. Well, yeah. Class will definitely be in session then.
All right. And to everybody else, thank you so much for joining us here on this maiden voyage of the Survivor Academy. Hope to see you back next time when class will be back in session next week. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.